Welcome, everyone, to episode one of the Bon Bon Show. Today is January 19th, 2025. I am one of your hosts, Aaron. I just want to take a quick minute here, or a quick pause, just to thank you for all your episode, or for all your support of episode zero, and for all your feedback. We've made some adjustments to the visuals, audio, and the flow of the show. I want to thank Kirk for doing all of those technical changes in the back end, as he's been putting a lot of hard work into making those improvements for you. In today's show, we're super, super excited to talk about one of our favorite game franchises of all time. Well, one of mine at least, Monster Hunter. I'm sure it's Kirk's as well, but we'll get into that. But before we talk about today's topic, we each wanted to share one random thing that we experienced, or at least interested us, over the past week. So, what say you, Kirk? What's up today?
Hey, Aaron. Thank you so much for that intro. Thanks as well to the listeners of episode zero. We had so much fun creating that episode, and y'all seem so excited giving us feedback and stuff. We really have taken it all on board, and we're excited to bring you more episodes of the Bon Bon Show. Monster Hunter is in the air with the next entry, Monster Hunter Wilds, being set to be released in just over a month, almost 6 weeks, or a little bit over, almost 6 weeks. But what is Monster Hunter? Why is it awesome? Let's chat about that today. But first, as you said, Aaron, tell me about your, violin lesson experience recently?
Yeah, as I mentioned in episode zero, that I was starting violin lessons, and those have started just almost a week ago on Monday. And yeah, to say the least, it was probably one of the most intimidating pieces of I guess musical instruments I've ever picked up in my entire life. Walked into the room, everyone was there except me, and I was like, I showed up early, well, as early as I could. I think it was about 5-10 minutes early. And everyone was already sitting there quite quietly, just sitting in their chairs. And I was like, okay, I'll take a front row seat since that was the only one left available to me. Plopped down. And yeah, I think the instrument itself is quite intimidating, picking it up. And of course, it's not my violin. It's like a rental from the center that I'm taking the violin lessons through. So it was I guess a bit stressful, and I didn't want to drop the thing, and the teacher came around as, this particular violin is about $2,000 Canadian.
Oh my God. I hope it's insured.
Yeah. Yeah, it's insured. I think I'm pretty much covered for anything if it, like, you know, gets damaged or anything, unless I, you know, on purpose decide to smash the violin in a spout of anger because of how poorly I'm playing it. But yeah, I think after the first lesson was done and I kind of reduced my tension and stress while holding it and became more comfortable each day, I've been trying to practice for about an hour or so each day and following some guides and videos that I found. I've been feeling more confident holding it, holding the violin, holding the bow, as there's, you know, a special technique to hold both. And it's, you're supposed to be as relaxed as possible when you hold the violin. And so I'm getting there. I'm getting there a little bit each and every day. I haven't really played much in terms of music. I've been able to tune the violin. I've been able to, you know, pluck the strings a little bit with my finger and use the bow to play a few simple songs like Hot Cross Buns, which is like three notes. But yeah, so far I'm really enjoying it. I think just to wrap up my violin experience so far, I think my goal, my end game with the instrument is just a curious perspective to gain at this point. It's just to learn what it was like to hold it, how I'll feel at the end of 5 weeks. I guess we'll see. I'll update you maybe at the very end of this little training regimen that I have to see where I might go with it. I'm not committing myself to become a violin master and join a symphony at all. It's just something. Yeah, no plans to see me in a symphony.
We're all invested in your story arc. You know, it's like, this is your manga. This is your anime. You're going to start out as a noob and then you're going to be playing in an orchestra.
Are you going to draw that and write that out for me?
I cannot draw to save my life, but writing I could definitely do.
Yeah, we'll find a artist to draw this particular chapter of my life. But I'll let everyone know how it goes. But as of right now, I'm enjoying it. It's definitely challenging, but it's something new to learn, and just getting back into playing an instrument again is really fun. So yeah, I'll update you on my progress soon. To be continued for sure.
Nice.
Getting over to you, Kirk. How's your last week been? What's been going on?
Well, things have really been heating up for me. And my like graduate school studies here in Japan. Like, someone should have really told me that transcribing interviews was this challenging. I'm making good progress though, slow and steady. As I prepare for like a very important presentation of my research in mid-February. So I think just under a month from now. Yeah, man, it's crazy how much time is flying. My interviews were done in English and Japanese. So I asked the questions in English, and then I had a translator translate my questions. The respondents responded in Japanese, and then my translator responded, translated into English. So, like, nowadays, like, you can plug all of these kind of audio recordings into AI or different tools, and they kind of spit out the transcript, like, nice and easy. Most of my colleagues, whether it's Cambodian or English or Chinese, they can do this. But my interviews are like a native English speaker, a not so native English speaker with an accent, understandably, and then Japanese. So like, when I plug that into different tools or AI, different things I'm trying, it's just like telling me that that the language is like freaking Mongolian or some some crazy thing. But it's not like difficult or like frustrating. It's more just like, wow, this is a lot of work, and I have a newfound respect for people transcribing interviews for their research.
Are you recording? So you're recording all the audio. Are you doing a lot of like written notes as well at the same time? Like, or is it mainly just putting on the audio recording, doing the interview, and then looking back at it after the fact and making your notes from that perspective? I'm just trying to get a sense of how this meeting is going and how furious you might be writing and like asking questions and having a conversation. Exactly. And then doing the recording and maybe taking notes. I'm like, that just sounds like a lot of frantic work taking place all at one time.
Exactly. Yep. It's both. So how I was like trained or taught to do it is that I have to take notes at the same time. And so it is very frantic and chaotic, and you have to kind of make notes and prepare your next question. And it's like it's a semi-structured interview, meaning sometimes you ask questions related to their responses, and it's just like you have to remain calm on the outside to be like, yeah, I've got everything under control. I'm just going to ask this next question. While inside you're like, oh my God, this is crazy. I have to write this notes and then I have to think about the next question. But yeah, then listening to the interviews again and then make additional notes, because to not get into like crazy research graduate school speech, like my research is mostly qualitative. So it's not about like the numbers and analyzing statistics and stuff, like quantitative stuff would be.
Gotcha.
So it's all about like my interpretation. So it's so important to take detailed notes and have clear recordings. And then it's going to take me many weeks after finish transcribing to kind of analyze and make sense of the data from these interviews.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think it sounds frantic and challenging in the beginning, like you've been mentioning and describing it, but a skill that is a valuable one to have. And the more that you do it, it becomes just like, you know, easier and easier as you go. I hope that in the midst of this, and also, you know, preparing for your presentation in mid-February, that, you know, everything is going okay. And, you know, myself and all of our listeners, I'm sure, are you know, wishing you the best in your presentation and all the work that that leads up to that and all the research that you're obtaining. So, you know, good on you for all of this hard work. And, you know, we hope and look forward to hearing how everything goes after your presentation in middle of February there.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. And all the best on your quest to become the greatest violin player in the universe. We're all cheering you on.
It's going to happen. You're going to see me on those billboards. That's for sure.
Yes.
So, all right. Yeah, that was a busy week. I think we were busy. It sounds like we're learning a lot. And, you know, considering our age, I mean, we're not that old, but, you know, we're getting older. It's good to hear that we're still, you know, pursuing down, learning new things and trying new things, even though it might be hard. You know, it's definitely easy for us to want to maybe just continue doing things that we know that we know the results of, and we don't have to, you know, push our brains too much. But it sounds like both of us are doing that, and, you know, encourage us to keep going down those things, even though sometimes it's not easy. It's definitely, those things are tend to be the most fulfilling things that we do in our lives. So kudos to us for trying. And for all of you out there, if there's something that you want to challenge yourself with, or there's something that you're currently challenging yourself with, you know, best of luck to you. And we're here to support you as well. And if you wanted to share, you know, some of those things that you're challenging yourself with, you know, let us know and we can have a nice conversation about that. So with that behind us, let's get on to our main topic of today, the glorious Monster Hunter.
Monster Hunter, let's go.
Well, if you're not sure what Monster Hunter is, we will catch you up with what that is. It's a video game to start with, but to start off with, what is Monster Hunter? And we wanted to describe that in our own words, and I'll let Kirk kick that off with his description.
Yeah, Monster Hunter for me, you know, it's a video game, but it's about like teamwork and exploration. It's a game about hunting monsters, hence Monster Hunter. And as the player gets more powerful, so do the monsters. And you can really like see and feel your growth and development as a air quotes hunter. The story, admittedly, is usually nothing really to write home about.
Yeah, it tends to be forgettable, right?
Yeah, but like being able to group up online with friends to hunt, chat, and explore the world is what I really enjoy the most, you know, in Monster Hunter. So like 90% of my playtime in Monster Hunter games is usually online playing with friends. How about you, Aaron? What is Monster Hunter in your own words?
Yeah, I think just to go back on the story part just a little bit, because I know the stories tend to not have been all that great. I feel like the team is trying to change that a little bit more. I think we've started to see that, and I don't have experience with the Nintendo Wii and the 3DS games, but at least from, you know, previous titles like on the PSP that I played, the story was bare bones. It was just a reason to engage and fight monsters. But I feel like starting in Monster Hunter World on the PS4 and PC and Xbox, and then we had the Monster Hunter Rise and Sunbreak on the Nintendo Switch, and then moving into Wilds here shortly, I feel like the team's trying to expand a little bit more on the story and kind of trying to create a more connection to some of its characters and the guilds. And so, while it's still not anything meaningful or you're going to cry or you might get some connection to a character here and there, it's not, you know, anything on the level of Final Fantasy, but I feel, or something like Final Fantasy, but I do feel like the team is trying to put a little bit more emphasis on the story. Would you agree? Or
I agree. I feel like not all, how do I say, video games need to be Final Fantasy level of story. I feel like, as you said, the team has been putting in an effort to kind of connect the world and flesh out the world a bit more with the guild and the backstory of some of the monsters and like the characters that you interact with, and even like the expansion from in the most recent game, Rise to what's it called, Sunbreak, was like the story of what's his name? The vampire-looking monster.
Oh, Melzino.
Yeah, Melzino. I found that quite interesting story-wise, but it's not like you have to remember different arcs and different stories and how they overlap. Like, I feel like that would be too much, but they're kind of definitely beefing up things, especially coming up in Wilds. It looks like they're building on World and Sunbreak to make it more interactive and, story rich.
Yeah, I would agree. And for those wondering, oh, if I never played, previous titles in the series, if I wanted to jump into the new one, Wilds, am I going to miss anything story-wise? And I would say no. Like, they're standalone, and there might be some lore pieces there, here and there, or connections to some of the older games, but there's nothing story-wise that you're going to go, oh, I didn't play the previous title, so I'm kind of out of the loop. There's nothing like that. It's
Usually the entire cast of characters and NPCs and stuff that you meet are very different. Like, lore crazy people might pick up on certain connections. Like, apparently it's been said that one of the blacksmiths in the upcoming game might have been a child from a previous game. I'll have to look into that. But like, everything is like standalone. Overarching theme is hunting monsters, but you don't need to be playing the previous games to follow.
So if you are interested in checking it out, definitely feel like there's no barrier from a story perspective. It's all just the gameplay and the new mechanics and the thrill of the hunt. For Monster Hunter, for me, like similar to what Kirk has said, just building off that a little bit, for me, I think at its core, it's always been that dance between the character that you create, your hunter character. With the there's 14, there's a few other weapons in some of the other titles, but there's been 14 core main weapons in the series up until
Team
this
Lance,
point.
rise up. Best weapon ever.
Which I for Lance, I have been I think I'm a converted Lance main potentially going into
Whoa,
Wilds
no, bus.
after
Whoa,
playing
no, bus.
the initial beta. But I think that dance, and I remember playing solo quite a bit when I was younger on the PSP, and just understanding the moves that you had access to in your character and your piece of gear and your weapon, and then understanding and learning over time the moves or the dance, if you will, of your opponent, and kind of taking turns of when you can attack, when you need to guard, or when you need to dodge, or when you need to escape and then come back. That's kind of been one of the things I've really enjoyed about the series. It's just that learning process that you go in meeting a new monster and being like, whoa, like I don't know what to expect next. And then slowly over time, you become, a professional hunter in a sense, and you know what to expect. But the game will, change every once in a while, or the different levels of rank will incorporate new move sets into the monsters to keep things fresh. And so that's always been part of what Monster Hunter has meant to me, and it's about the preparation that you take before going into a hunt, the stamina of your character, and even just the stamina of yourself to go through a hunt, because you're usually given about 50 minutes to do a hunt. Sometimes there's variance to those quest time limits, but the standard one is about 50 minutes. And there's been times where I just maybe I was underleveled, or I wasn't prepared enough, or my gear wasn't up to snuff, and I encroached that 50-minute time limit, and I actually like eclipsed it, and I failed the mission because I just couldn't, get it done in enough time. And you go back and you think, oh, what do I need to do to be better and find that those weak points or these upgrades that I can make to my character to get and be successful. And so there was that mental fortitude that you needed to have. And in a way, there was a little bit of luck too. Sometimes you do a move, you're like, I'm gonna get hit, and sometimes and you just luckily, your invisible frames, your iframes kind of, were on your side, and other times they weren't.
And you get one shot.
And yeah, those one shots were like, I what? No.
I totally blocked that.
All the time. It wasn't my fault, it was the game's fault, right? So it's been very rewarding to play. Sometimes stressful playing alone, but as Kirk has said in multiplayer, the shenanigans and the laughs that you have with your partners, when you go against a big foe and if you land that big hit or you die a really funny way or you get launched by a hammer player or whatever that might be, I think all of those moments add up to a series that has probably given me some of the most fun I've ever had in gaming. And so that's kind of what Monster Hunter has meant to me, I guess, in a quick nutshell.
Yeah, we like hammer players, but we don't like long swords players. That's the overarching thing everyone needs to understand in Monster Hunter, right, Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, I might have to come clean and say I was a long sword main for quite a while. So I was,
Oh my God.
I mean, I did play multiplayer a ton back on PSP. So I wasn't tripping players, and I didn't really understand that there was, that opportunity, I guess, to
Yeah.
have that impact other people because it trips them up and they can't perform their moves successfully. And then I started learning more about that in Monster Hunter World on the PlayStation when I was playing with people more and more because of, online play and understanding, oh, my lance play has been impacting people negatively. So I have, excuse me, while I still play longsword occasionally, I definitely have transferred over to, I would say, Hunting Horn, Sword and Shield. What else? Lance, I think I'm going to go into bow a little bit. So there's a lot of variety, and what I will say about Monster Hunter is that every weapon is so different that you're almost playing a new game when you're picking up a different weapon. Even though you're fighting the same monster, how you play and how you fight against that monster is just so totally different. You might as well say, like, this is, if there's 14 weapons in the game, there's 14 almost mini games that you're playing within the game itself just because of how diverse and how different each weapon plays. And so while you might think, oh, this weapon looks really cool initially, say the longsword, you might try experimenting with a greatsword, which is slower, bigger, but more impactful, and you might like that style more. But again, how you play with the greatsword is just totally different than the longsword. So if you haven't experimented with the game before, definitely if you pick it up, just try to be as open as possible to all the weapons because they play so differently.
Nice. Good advice, Monster Hunter Senpai. Yeah. So, you seem very experienced in this Monster Hunter thingy. When did you get into Monster Hunter? What was your first game, and what was your initial impression? Any memorable stories from those early days of Monster Hunter?
Oh, man, just such a loaded question, but yes, I will do my best. I think my initial experience with Monster Hunter was back on the PlayStation Portable. So, for those that recall, that was kind of like the first PlayStation Portable handheld console that PlayStation had released, kind of like around the time of PlayStation 3, PlayStation 2. I can't remember the exact timing of when the PlayStation Portable launched, but that was my initial, I guess, introduction to Monster Hunter. One of my good buddies at the time, or not at the time, right now, who's obviously one of my best friends, during our university days, he had went to one of our local game shops, and at the time it was called, or it is called, Monster Hunter Freedom. And it was just sitting on the shelf. We didn't do any research, or he didn't do any research. He just kind of saw the initial small little slim case that were the PSP style, and it was a hunter wielding a great sword kind of
The box
facing off
art.
against the box art was the giant hunter, or the great sword hunter facing off against a what we just would have called like a dragon, but it was the Rathalos monster that we would eventually learn who that was. And really, looking at cases back in the day, especially a PSP case being so small, there's not a lot of information that's being displayed on the back. But it was enough for him to, go like, this looks really cool. I'm gonna give it a shot. And it had local, on the box, it tells you it has local multiplayer up to four people. And he immediately thought of me And so he told me about this game in our next interaction. He's like, hey, man, like you gotta go buy Monster Hunter, you know, hype me up about it. So I went to the game store, bought the game. And then, that was our first experience with Monster Hunter. It was the first time I've ever played a game like that. It has a really expansive weapon and armor tree, unlike anything I had seen until that point. Every time you beat a monster in Monster Hunter, it unlocks a new, you know, weapon set, a new armor set. And you just kind of have the allure for us. Yeah, you just got to beat all of the monsters and get all their parts and build all of the gear and the weapons. And just seeing that weapon and armor tree expand, we're like, oh, I want to see what the new armor set is. I want to see what the new weapon skills are, what the new weapon looks like. Everything was, even though it was on the PSP and the graphics weren't the greatest, at the time it was like the best thing that we had ever seen.
And the weapons and the armor that you craft from the monsters take on the characteristics of that monster, which is awesome.
Exactly. And even just the detail and the variety, that's what was really cool to us. And so we did try to play as much as we could, you know, together, but we couldn't play together probably as often as we wanted to. And so I did find myself playing alone quite a bit, and that's kind of where the big challenge was. I remember facing up against Tigrex or Tigrex, depending on which side of the which the side of the coin fence. You liked. Yeah. But I remember just always having so much trouble with that monster initially. Like it got to a point where I was like, I don't know if I could keep on going. Like the way that you played on the PSP, the D-pad and the analog stick, the little knob, was on the left side of the console. So in terms of controlling the game, you were using your hand in, like, it was called the claw grip, because the way you had to position your thumb and your fingers to move the analog stick and the D-pad at the same time.
Sounds like carpal tunnel syndrome.
Exactly. your hands would just get so sore that my play sessions would generally be like maybe an hour, hour and a half. And it was like, hey, I got to stop because my hand starts to hurt. And so I think playing on the PSP kind of stopped me from playing the series as probably too much, which maybe was a good thing. I probably didn't need to play it a ton. But that later resulted in us kind of buying Monster Hunter Freedom Unite, which came out a couple of years later. But luckily for that, it was at the PS3 era at that time, and there was an app, I believe it was on the Japanese PSN store, that we had to download it from, because I believe that's when I initially created my Japanese PSN account. But there was an application on the PS3 called Ad Hoc Party, which allowed us to connect our PSPs through our Wi-Fi to our PS3, and then we could connect online that way. Because at the time, the Monster Hunter games were still, for a multiplayer experience, kind of limited to a local setup, which makes sense if you think about how the game was mainly catered towards the Japanese audience, and Japanese players typically with PSPs would gather together in person and play the game that way.
And because there was always Nintendo people around, DSs, would... Game Boys and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think at the time, and maybe the technology too, it just wasn't necessary for them to focus on putting a online component into the game. But from a Western perspective, you know, there's sometimes bigger distances between, you know, your friends and whatnot. And everyone kind of like to stay at home as opposed to going out, just different lifestyles. And so the online Ad Hoc Party online capability really allowed me and my friend to play a lot more. And it was only just us two that would play together. We didn't have anybody else that really owned a PSP, or if they did, they weren't interested in Monster Hunter. It was still a very niche game until the explosion that was Monster Hunter World. And so I skipped all of the Nintendo era Monster Hunter games, essentially, just because I never had those consoles. It was just a time of my life where I was more focused on PlayStation or Xbox gaming, and I wasn't really into Nintendo gaming at that time. And so I kind of missed that era of gaming, which Kirk will kind of mention in a little bit. But Monster Hunter World, that sucked me back right into the Monster Hunter franchise and kind of rejuvenated my love for the franchise, which, you know, persists until this very day, and why we're having a podcast about it.
Yeah. Definitely. So Monster Hunter World was such a good Monster Hunter game, man. Like, it just fixed so much of the clunky issues that the franchise had and just opened it up to more like a bigger audience. And I think it's like Monster Hunter has overtaken all the other franchises for Capcom and is now their best selling franchise of all time.
Yeah, that's true. I think it was, it's really cool that the team and the company really stuck to Monster Hunter. I feel like it could have been a game that just, you know, stayed as a very niche title and never really exploded, but it got, it was kind of like, maybe it got a little bit lucky, but they were very open to, you know, trying new things and trying to make it work to grab a bigger audience and make it to what it is today, to get the resources and financing to create like probably what Wilds is up until this point, like their grandest vision of what Monster Hunter can be. And I think it's really cool that they've been able to get to this point with the franchise, because depending on, you know, if it was at a different company or whatnot, different,
it'll probably have been canceled.
Yeah, we might not be playing Monster Hunter anymore, right? Or if we are, it would be older games, but we wouldn't have gotten any other ones. So Monster Hunter World really allowed for the success to keep snowballing to a point where, like you said, it's the biggest franchise that Capcom now has. So, yeah, tremendous. Yeah. Yeah, Kirk, tell me about how you first got into Monster Hunter.
Okay, yeah. Well, I got into Monster Hunter in, I think, 2010 it was. My first game was Monster Hunter Tri on the Wii. I remember Monster Hunter being huge in Japan, but it was, as you also mentioned, it was very much like a niche game in the West. Of course, being crazy about Japan for many years now, I would always hear news about this Monster Hunter game in Japan. And like, I remember, I think Tri came out a year or so before it came out in Japan, before it came out in the West. So I was like watching these little news clips or reading these articles about like thousands of people lining up to get, of course those were the days when you had to like go to a store to buy video games. Oh man, I miss those times. Now everyone just stays at home until midnight and clicks download.
Yeah, or but even like, pre-downloads it now, and it's just like bam, midnight, okay, I'm instantly playing and crashing the servers.
Exactly. Like back in the day, man, you had to like line up around the block, or you know what I mean, stocks would be out, and like it was like I feel like more hype for certain game releases, and you kind of could have checked the pulse on how popular a game would be depending on how crazy the lines were and how people were like not really fighting, but you know, like trying their best to get their games or their consoles or whatever. But again, in the era of, you know, online gaming and online downloads and online ordering, you know, I don't think we'll ever go back to that. But anyway, yeah, so I saw these huge lines in Japan for this Monster Hunter Tri game. I'd never heard of Monster Hunter. I didn't even know this was the third entry in the series. But I was like, yo, I've got a Wii, and I'd like to play that. So yeah, I found out when it was coming out in the West, and I got it. And I must say, like, Tri was, like, amazing. There was definitely a huge learning curve. I'd never played any game like that. And even to this day, Monster Hunter is still quite unique. Many have tried to replicate the formula, but none haven't, you know? I just remember how clunky the game was in terms of controls. I guess the same was for you with the PSP controls. It was the same on the Wii. The controls were clunky, the menus were a pain, and just like not intuitive to browse through. But like, I don't know, after a while of playing, it just kind of clicked. And I was just like really crazy about the lance. In terms of like the weapons. Oh my god. Like usually in Monster Hunter games, I like the lance because it's very like defensive. Like I'm not the type of Monster Hunter player that's going to like roll around or dodge and all that stuff like other weapons, quote unquote, force you to do. I just want to stand there, put up my giant shield, block your attack, and then stab you in your eyeball. That's definitely my style of playing in Monster Hunter. So yeah, I love the lance. I've tried many weapons. I also like the light bow gun. And again, the gun lance, because again, it has a shield.
But and yeah, the gun attached to the lance.
Yeah, that's amazing. So yeah, so in Monster Hunter, you kind of like carve a monster, hunt a monster, carve a monster, upgrade your gear, then fight a more powerful monster, and do the same loop over and over. It seems simple, and like, how can you be just like hunting and carving and crafting, hunting and carving and crafting over and over? But it's so freaking addictive. The various monsters are like the real true stars of the franchise, I believe. Mm-hmm. You can tell that like a lot of, affection, a lot of work goes into like creating and designing these monsters, from how they move to how they look to how they sound, their attacks. It's so amazing. Like, every monster in Monster Hunter, in the Monster Hunter franchise, has like its fan base, you know what I mean? So yeah, it's like, there's no like monsters where you'd be like, oh my god, that's a lame monster, nobody likes it. There's always someone somewhere who's gonna like that particular monster and looking forward to seeing it come out. So yeah, so Tri was my first Monster Hunter game. Unlike Aaron, I haven't played any kind of handheld Monster Hunter games. I started with Tri on the Wii, and then I played World on the PS4, and then I played Rise Sunbreak on the Switch, which I guess can also be called a handheld, but like, I play most of the time docked. And I'm really, really excited about Monster Hunter Wilds in a couple weeks. Like, Monster Hunter World overall is still my favorite Monster Hunter game. I think I still have more hours in Monster Hunter World than I do in Rise and Sunbreak. And I'm just excited to see what the team from World has, you know, like, continued that work into Wilds. You know, I played the, what was it, open beta test some time ago. That didn't really run so well on my PC, but I see they have taken the feedback on board and have made various changes and updates and upgrades. So there'll be another test in a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, there's two tests in February. There's like two weekends from a Thursday to Sunday, I think. Is it the 6th to the 13th or something? Or I don't know the actual dates offhand, but yeah, they're opening the beta again. I think it's really the same build, but they added another monster on there. But from my understanding, the performance changes that everyone wants to see won't be seen until the full release, that the beta really is the old beta from months and months ago. So it will still perform. If it was performing poorly on your PC or your console, then it will still perform the same on the new beta test in February, those two weekends. But definitely give it a try. Or if you are curious and haven't tried it before, it's free to download. So if you are curious about what the series is like, it's a good one. I got to go back to the handheld, though. Did you ever play Rise Sunbreak in handheld mode, or it was like purely in docked mode when you were playing Rise?
Yeah, I think it was purely in like 99.9% of my playtime. Like, I don't know if there's like any game like that on the Nintendo Switch that like I was excited to play handheld. Maybe Pikmin 4 and a little bit of Metroid Dread. I think those were probably two of the games I remember like playing consistently, probably in bed or on the train or something. But like, I don't know, whenever I played Monster Hunter Sunbreak Rise, I was usually playing with you and other friends in Discord and stuff. So it was like most of it was in docked mode.
Yeah, and you were using a pro controller, or were you using the...
Yeah. I use the Pro Controller exclusively because my hands hurt. The Switch, I don't know if I have big hands. I feel like I have regular sized hands. So like that's the other thing why I really see now you're refreshing my memory. One of the reasons why I don't play the Switch in handheld mode as often is because my hands hurt after a short time of playing because I feel like my hands are so much bigger than the console itself.
Yeah, I think if I compare it back to the PSP, playing Switch in handheld mode was like phenomenally better just because of the each Joy-Con has an analog stick, so it's already so much better. But I think the Joy-Cons, I wish they were a little bit bigger. I know why they're like slim and built the way they are, but I have played in handheld mode for on the Switch a decent amount, definitely more in docked mode comparatively, but I still find it good. But it could be, I guess it could be better. But I nothing would ever be as good as like a proper controller. But at least the Joy-Con version playing Monster Hunter on a Switch is phenomenally way better than it ever was playing on a PSP. At least I don't have to use the claw grip anymore.
Yeah, and the good like connecting to like Switch a couple of days ago, the Switch 2 was announced. I know this show is about Monster Hunter, but it's got bigger Joy-Cons and magnetically attached Joy-Cons and a bigger screen, so maybe my hands or our hands won't hurt as much playing on that one, and maybe we'll play some more undocked stuff while traveling and on the train and in bed and stuff.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Which kind of leads us into our next question.
So like when is Monster Hunter Wilds coming out? What platforms or any other info you want to share with us?
Yeah, so Monster Hunter Wilds, if you're curious, comes out February 28th on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S, and then on Steam. There are performance kind of requirements if you're looking at getting it on PC. So you'll want to go to the Steam page just to see what those the minimum requirements and recommended requirements are. Those might have changed, or they might be changing based on the changes that Capcom is making for the official launch. I know they're hoping to lower those requirements for PC players, but what those changes are, I'm not too sure at this point. So those are the platforms. And as you just mentioned with kind of the Switch 2, I'd be curious to know if Switch 2 will get a version of Monster Hunter Wilds, or will the Switch 2 get an exclusive Monster Hunter title, similar to how Rise Sunbreak worked. For those that don't know, Monster Hunter Rise came out initially for the Nintendo Switch, and then eventually it was released on other platforms, but the primary platform at the beginning was the Nintendo Switch console. So I'm wondering now that we have a Switch 2, and obviously, developers have been building and developing games for that console, if we'll get another Monster Hunter, whether it's Wilds or, kind of more of a hybrid home slash portable version of Monster Hunter. So we'll see. And as we kind of mentioned, there's two beta weekends in February. So if you are interested in taking part, they are free to download and it's free to join. I do believe you need an internet connection to play the beta, as it's kind of somewhat of a network test as well, for Capcom. So you won't be able to play offline, though. Just as a heads up, if you are more of an offline player or a solo player, the full release game you'll be able to play offline, so you won't need an internet connection if you just want to play the game solo and go through the game that way. But of course, if you want to play with your friends or other random players online, then you will need an internet connection to, join into those lobbies. I think the biggest things coming out in Wilds that's a little bit different than the previous games is in the previous games, the maps would be sorted into, you'd have to load into them separately. So if there was a desert map and that there was a volcano map, or if there was
Or
an
a
ice map,
forest.
forest map, you would load into that, excuse me, map separately. And then within that map, there would be zones. And in the old games, each zone you'd have a loading screen. So if you're,
Oh
say there
my
was 12
God.
zones, you'd go from zone one to zone two, and then to do
It
that,
load.
there would be a clear path to, which zone you were going into, but you would have to load into that zone. In Monster Hunter World,
I remember
they
that from
changed
Tri.
That. Yep. Which actually, the zones sometimes were a savior, because if a monster was doing something really bad, you could just kind of like run into the old zone and load, and then it would be safe and quiet, and you could like sharpen and heal and put on buffs.
Strategically retreat to the next zone.
Yeah, exactly. And then load back into the initial other zone where the monster is. But in Monster Hunter World, they changed that a bit, where you still have to load into the area map. So say we're going into the ice map, you still load into the big ice map. But when you're going from the different zones in that map, it's all seamless. So there's no loading screens anymore. But yeah, they're taking one step further in Wilds, and now you will just load into the entire map. And if you want to go from the ice zone to the forest zone, there'll be a path that you can run or that you can take that will take you from both zones, but there's no loading. So it seems like there's loading going on in the background, of course, but it seems like
definitely
a seamless experience to the player, right? Where they don't have to, you know, leave to a menu or to a hub and then, you know, pick a new map to go to. So that's kind of one of the biggest. There's a lot of, you know, other changes to the game as well in terms of how the combat takes place. There's some new like focus mode and strategic opportunities to fight the monster and engage in monsters, and how you can wield two weapons now rather yep. than just one weapon. One weapon being
gun, lance, and
character.
Lance.
Exactly.
That's all you need.
Double lance, double bow. Maybe I'll go double crazy and go double longsword or something.
Oh, no. Kick from group. Kick from group.
Banned forever. And so there's a new... Previous Monster Hunter titles usually had like a palico, a feline, like a cat type character that would assist you. And that character is still with you, but they've added another one called a secret, which... It's kind of looks like a chocobo from Final Fantasy, or if you're not familiar with a chocobo, think of like a really like kind of bigger, stronger, faster version of like a emu. I guess it would be kind of like an emu in a sense.
Mm. A giant chicken.
Giant chicken, reptilian, can fly sort of, that you get to have on your journey in Monster Hunter Wilds. And that character, while it can hold other items of yours, can also store another weapon. So if you want to wield a gun lance and a lance, you initially start with the lance. You can call your sacred, jump on your sacred, and then when you're riding your sacred, you can pull out your gun lance, jump off your sacred, and then continue the battle from there. So there's a ton of extra variety that players have access to now, which we never had to before. Or if you wanted to switch weapons, it was a little bit different on how you would go about doing that. But this is more on the fly.
Definitely.
So those are kind of the big changes. Is there anything else, like from a big change perspective, that you can think of, Kirk, that you wanted to mention or comes to mind?
I think you covered everything. The seamless loading, the ability mm-hmm. to switch weapons on the fly. I think also there will be more, in terms of multiplayer, more people can load into kind of like your instance, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
So usually you can only have, I think, four players, was it? In your kind of like hub area.
Old games were four.
But now it's like, I don't know what the maximum will eventually be, but I know it's like over 20. Was it in the last beta?
And yeah, then... you can have like 100, actually.
Wow.
But in any given hunt, there's only four players that can be in your hunting session. But from a, I guess, from a group lobby perspective, you can have 100 people. In previous games, I think World was, 16 in a lobby, but still limited to four in a hunt. But I think I think the lobbies were 16. So this is much, much more. So if you have a big guild, or you want to join a big guild in order to always have like a hunting partner, then you'll definitely be able to do that and join those lobbies. Nice.
So, which of the revealed monsters for Wilds looks the most interesting to you, Aaron?
I think I gotta go with the title monster. It's been revealed. I mean, there's gonna be a lot of other monsters that will be revealed. But I think Arkveil being the title monster mainly just because the title monsters from the previous entries, if we just go from recently, like Malzino in Rise Sunbreak, we have Nergigante in Monster Hunter World. I think they've just always been so unique in their movesets, and they've always introduced something new that other monsters just haven't had. Because you'll see new monsters being introduced to the series, and they'll have new movesets, but it just won't be as intricate, or won't be as challenging, or won't be as, I guess, much of a as big of a dance or performance as the title monster is. And so I look forward to seeing what Arkfield has in terms of their moveset, what their theme music will be like. The music in Monster Hunter is just phenomenal in general, but each monster and usually will have their own theme. And so, of course, Arkfield will have their own theme. So I'm interested to hear what that music is like, because it's different when you just listen to it. But when you listen to it while also battling the monster at the same time, just is the effect and the passion, just the whole emotional value that you get from that fight is just heightened. So I'm interested to just to listen to that track. And then, of course, what it all comes down to at the end of the day when that monster has been defeated is what that armor and weapon set is going to look like. And I just, what will it be? What skills will it have? Will I want to, you know, chase? And as previous title monsters have been, I've always wanted to chase them. If I look at my hunting record on my guild cards, you know, title monsters usually have, if not the highest number of hunts to them. So I've always just enjoyed hunting those ones. So I think I've never really left a title fight being like, oh, that wasn't that good, or I don't want to do it again. And so I believe in Capcom to, you know, provide us with a really cool title monster fight. What about you, Kirk? Who are you looking forward to fight at this point?
Like all of the monsters, honestly, that have been revealed, the new ones so far look freaking awesome. But Lala Barina, I think it's how it's pronounced, Lala Barina, which is like a dancing spider that looks like a flower. I guess that's where the Barina should have been Ballerina, Lala Ballerina. But yeah, a dancing spider that camouflages itself to look like a flower sounds terrifying, and like only something you could see in a game like Monster Hunter. I just really know, like, from fighting the previous monster, previous spider themed monsters, that Lala Barina, I'm gonna call it Lala Ballerina, will be awesome. Like, just seeing the snippets of it from the trailers and stuff, how it moves, how it looks, I'm just like, that armor is gonna be crazy sick. Like, I can see it already. All the fashion hunters will be modeling in that armor. Fashion hunting is also another, like, what I say, sub genre of Monster Hunter players. You have people who just hunt monsters, craft gear, and just model and like dress up in the skin of monsters, take pictures and hang out, and, you know, just socialize. Those that you also have the fashion hunters, and I'm already seeing that Lala Barina's gear, armor will be like a fan favorite of theirs.
Oh, that reminds me of one of the new things for this title as well, which I think has been requested for a long time, is that normally when you start a Monster Hunter game, you choose between like a male hunter or a female hunter, and that usually that will lock you into an armor set that is made just for males. Then there's the armor set just for females. And when you're on that particular save file, you can't switch gender. So if you choose a male, then you're male for that entire save file. And so you're locked away from an entire set of armor that was built and made and designed for the female, or vice versa. So for this game, what they've done is that you can build your character. It doesn't matter the gender. You have the ability to craft both the male and female armor set and then put that on your character. So the fashion hunters are just swimming in joy right now because they have access to all of the armor in the game rather than just half of the armor from before. So that's really, really cool. And I think you can see that in the beta from the limited armor sets that are there. So you can, and I believe the skills are the same between male and female. It's really just the look and the design of that armor piece that that changes. So just go ham on fashion hunting from this point forward. And I think, if I remember correctly from a video I seen or someone talking or another podcast I was listening to, I think Lala Labarina might have, I think because the forest where she is from mm-hmm. kind of changes a bit because there's kind of like cycles in the wilds maps now where there's kind of like a time of plenty, and then there's like a more of a diverse type setting where things are a little bit hectic. There might be storms or whatever, what might have you. So I believe her moveset or her behaviors change when you're fighting her, depending on what that season is that's in that map area that you're in. So
interesting.
That's going to be really cool. And this is in this game is if you're fighting in like a storm, then the monster might behave one way. And then if you're fighting them when it's like a nice, clear, sunny day, then they might be more chill and not as angry, or maybe they're even more angry because they're trying to enjoy the day and then you're just coming along
like trying to stab me and take my tail and carve me into a new dress.
Yeah, exactly. Which is like funny because when my partner watches me play this game, she's always like, why are you just going up to monsters? They're just drinking some water from a lake, or they're just walking around, and then you just go up and hit them. You're just such a mean person. Like,
are we the baddies?
Yeah, are we the bad guys in Monster Hunter? But supposedly the reason is that the guild in the game that oversees everything is that you're trying to create a balance between, you know, monsters and humans, and you're only supposed to, the guild, you're only fights them because there's maybe an abundance, mm-hmm. so they pose a risk to people or the world, and nope. So you're trying to defeat them to bring balance back to, you know, where it needs
to be. I don't believe
not,
the guild.
Yeah, don't believe the guild. So, yeah, do I feel bad hunting monsters? There's some monsters that just look like they should never be hunted. I'll get into which monster that is in a little bit, but mm-hmm. speaking of monsters,
I've got my own too.
Yeah. which monsters are you hoping? So we have the revealed ones, and if you're interested on who's been revealed, you can go to the Monster Hunter website and check that out. But who hasn't been revealed, or who you want to see in the game return in Wilds, who would be your top three?
Yeah, I feel like the Monster Hunter franchise has, like, I don't know, dozens, if not probably close to, if not more than 100 monsters overall that has been released through all the different games. Mm-hmm. But one of my first loves is Rathian, which is kind of like a beginner monster. But she's like the perfect beginner monster. I feel like when you can beat a Rathian in a Monster Hunter game flawlessly, you know that you're becoming a good hunter. Mm-hmm. My favorite variant of Rathian would be like the pink Rathian. That's definitely my favorite variant, and I hope that she makes it into Wilds. Another of my favorite.
Chance.
Yeah. Another of my favorite is one you mentioned earlier, Nergigante. Yeah, Nergigante is by far the most memorable monster from World. It's aggressive, and it literally eats other monsters, not just any monster, Elder Dragons, which are like the biggest, baddest, most destructive of all the monsters. This monster eats those monsters.
For a snack.
So, yeah, if Nergigante shows up, I'll definitely be going crazy. And finally, I want Dodogama. Like you were mentioning about like sweet, calm monsters, and Dodogama is just the cutest, most friendly, and most harmless monster. And I really want him to return. He literally just walks around eating rocks and minding his own business, but other monsters and the hunters are always picking on the poor guy. So if anyone listening knows also where I can get some kind of Dodogama plushie, please let me know. What about your monsters that you're looking forward to seeing or returning?
I think my favorite monster, I don't know if, is it my favorite monster of all time? I mean, maybe recency bias since World came out, but my favorite would be Toby Kadachi. So if you're not familiar with Toby Kadachi, he's kind of like a electric squirrel monster, I would say. He's kind of got like a blue silver hue to him. I just really like the color. I just, again, another monster that I feel like I like squirrels. I like when I see squirrels in the real life. So he kind of reminds me of just like this playful creature that just wants to kind of fly and hop around the trees. And that's the one I would hope
and to shock see. You to death.
Shock me to death and stun me and destroy me and swipe me. But I don't like killing him. So what I've done in the previous game is I only capture Toby Kadachi. But when I play with people, I have to make sure that's very clear because they will threaten me and say, we will kill Toby. And then if I kill a Toby, it'll show up on my guild card that I killed a Toby. And yes, I don't want to see that number get bigger than a zero. So that would be, I don't think Toby's going to get in only just because he was introduced in World and he's been in Rise. So for him to make it into three games in a row, and he's not that popular of a monster, and he's really like an entry level kind of, I would say maybe entry to mid monster.
Maybe the same level as Rathian.
Yeah, I think Rathian's a little bit more ruthless. That poison, I think, really gets the poison tail and understanding that whole moveset probably gets people more than Toby. Maybe, I'm not sure. So I'm not high on hopes that Toby will make it in, but that's okay. If I want to fight Toby or look at Toby, I can just boot up an old game. I think number two would be Kirin. Kirin is like a unicorn, another electric type.
We're seeing a trend here, ladies and gentlemen.
Do I have an affinity to electric type monsters? I was going to say Pokemon, but no. Monsters.
I am so shocked.
Ooh. See what you did there. Only because we don't see a lot of monsters with that kind of shape and moveset. He's been a challenging, like he was one that could one-shot you in World quite easily in older games
definitely.
Too. He could one-shot you. It was something that you definitely like a skill check. You had to make sure that you had the right armor set, that you had the right skills, especially if you were getting hit, if you weren't able to dodge his moves and memorize them. You had to make sure that your defense was like super, super high or you had a lot of good items on you. And so I find his fight quite thrilling and yeah, just one that I enjoy. I think a lot of people don't like Kirin, but I find him unique in his model, like in terms of like the type of monster he is. There's not a lot of them, so I think it adds a unique monster type into the game if they were to bring him back into Wilds. And then the last one would be for me, and I think all of my monsters are a result of me playing the PSP games and then the PlayStation games, just because I don't have any of the experience with the Nintendo, the monsters introduced in the Nintendo games. But Lunastra is another monster. It's kind of like a lion type monster, I would say. He or she kind of pairs with another monster called Teostra. So Teostra is red and then Lunastra is blue. And I always enjoyed Lunastra a little bit more than Teostra just because I found the fight a bit more challenging.
She's
I like
also
the music
crazy.
A little bit better. Yeah, very crazy, more intense. But I remember beating Lunastra when I finally figured out beating Lunastra. I just felt like, oh, I did it. Like, it's not, you know, as big as like other monsters,
like a devil's roll.
Yeah, not as annoying, but I just remember feeling like just that fist pump and being like, yes, I finally did it. It was just a memorable feeling for me when I beat Lunastra for the first time. And we haven't seen Lunastra since World either. We always see Teostra. Teostra tends to be the number one Elder Dragon that gets in amongst other Elden Dragons, but Lunastra not so much. So I'd like to see Lunastra brought back into the game if possible. Yeah, that was a lot of Monster Hunter.
Yes.
I had a lot of fun nerding out about Monster Hunter.
Same
this
here,
time,
buddy.
And just reminiscing about the old games and just looking forward to all the new memories we'll make in Monster Hunter Wilds. I think it's just another platform, and I think a lot of games are like this. It's just a platform for friends to get together, have conversations, have fun with another, share a few laughs, and that's what gaming should be about. And I think Monster Hunter does that well in terms of bringing people together and creating memorable moments. And so I really look forward to playing Monster Hunter with you online. Maybe we can, you know, if the sun aligns correctly, we can play in person one day. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
And I hope you, our listener, if you weren't familiar with Monster Hunter, that you're a little bit more intrigued about the series now. And if you're not, that's okay. We know it's not for everyone, but hopefully you enjoyed our little rant about this game. And yeah, anything else you wanted to say, Kirk, before we end it off here?
Yeah, I really enjoyed creating this episode, geeking out about Monster Hunter with you. And I hope, as you said, the listeners enjoyed learning about Monster Hunter if they had no idea what Monster Hunter was before, or like learning something new about Monster Hunter if they are also familiar with the series. I know a couple of our friends are also excited to play Monster Hunter when it gets out. I will be streaming it on Twitch. My Twitch channel is at JamaiPlays for anyone listening who has Twitch. But yeah, this was really, really, really fun to do. Something I also wanted to add before we close out, that the Bonbon Show is available on YouTube, but now it's also available on Amazon, Spotify, and iTunes. So wherever you listen to your podcasts, you're listening to this already, but like, you can search for it on other places and find it as well. And I'll put the links in the show notes.
Yeah, we're spreading around the interweb, so we're making it hopefully convenient for you if there's a podcast platform that you prefer to use, then you'll be able to do that. So thanks, Kirk, for setting that up. And yeah, if you have any questions, right now we just have YouTube comments. So if you are on YouTube listening, share your comments and feedback with us. We'll definitely like to engage in a conversation, and let us know if you plan on picking up Monster Hunter Wilds in February or sometime thereafter. Or if you've played any of the other previous games, let us know and we can geek out together and share more memories and fun times together.
All right. This has been episode 1 of The Bonbon Show. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks, everyone. Till next time.